Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to NITP's For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about special retirement categories and benefits for air traffic controllers, firefighters, LEOs, law enforcement officers, and we're going to talk about employees with certain overseas service. And who better to lead us in that than Bob Bronstein, federal benefits expert, fellow seminar presenter, retired Fed. And didn't you work with one of a law enforcement agency?
Well, I did. I was in human resources for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms way, way back when they were part of Treasury. And to make matters even better, my wife is a retired ATF agent, so I have a fair amount of knowledge, at least on the LEO side, personally. And of course, I know the other ones, too.
Okay, now each one of these categories, and to be fair, the idea of this show came from an email, and an emailer emailed in and said, you know, why don't you have a show on this? Oddly enough, it was last week. I called Bob.
Timely.
Bob, are you available? And he said, yeah. Anyway, so thanks for coming, but let's take it. Air traffic controllers. Why do they get special treatment? What is the special treatment?
Well, when you consider the stress of that job, I mean, they're on those screens for a couple of hours and then they're off. I mean, it's a very, very intense occupation. And as a result, like the other categories, these are jobs that have mandatory separation ages, you know, 56, 57. And because they have to leave the workforce earlier due to age, they get enhanced benefits, which they pay more dearly for. And particularly when we talk about annuities, usually you're looking at people who generally are able to retire, you know, in their 60s, 50s, 60s, whenever they want to go. And then their annuities are based on their years of service at that point in time. If you have a short fuse on how long you can work, then you've got to get that annuity faster. And what the government does is it requires a slightly larger contribution to the annuity fund, the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund for air traffic controllers and the other categories we'll talk about. And when they leave, they get, I guess, what you'd call an equitable benefit because their formula, the percentage reimbursement for each year that they work is larger than those who are not in these categories. So they pay more for these benefits. They get a bigger benefit when they go, but they have to leave. They don't really have the option of sticking around longer, whereas other feds can work as long as they want to.
I don't know that this is undifferent than in the private sector. Police retire at an earlier age because of the stress. Firefighters, if I'm not mistaken,
correct,
are the same thing. So if somebody listening say, why is the Fed different? Well, it isn't. Mm-hmm. All righty. So air traffic controllers, how are they calculated? Well, let's take a look. How is a non-LEO annuity calculated?
Well, let's look at the first population first. They're the majority of the workforce at this point in time. And generally speaking, when you do a calculation for an annuity, it's your high three average salary. And then we take the years that you've worked and we give you a percentage for each one of those years. The first general formula, if one retires, say, at their minimum retirement age, 56, 57, whatever the case might be, usually gives you 1% for each year. So if you get 30 years in, it's 30%. And you get a little bit of a kicker if you retire at age 62 with 20 or more years. Each year is 1.1%. So that same person with 30 years would get 33%. The difference with the air traffic controller, firefighter, law enforcement community is that their first 20 years, for which, again, they're contributing more to the retirement fund to get, is 1.7%. For each of those first 20 years.
So close to twice as much.
Close to twice as much. But remember, they can't get that 1.1% because they have to be off the rolls before age 62. And most of them have to go out by about age 57, with a few exceptions. So they get that 34% for the first 20 years as opposed to 20%. And then every year thereafter is 1%. They contribute more to the retirement fund in order to get this. That's their basic benefit is larger. Now, once again, in the FERS community, the bridge to Social Security that we've actually dedicated shows to, known as the FERS annuity supplement, for those who are in the general population, you have to pretty much wait until full retirement age, minimum retirement age, I should say, to get the annuity supplement. retire at 56 or 57 with 30 years of service, 60 with 20 years, you get this annuity supplement, this bridge to Social Security that's paid by OPM. When you're in the law enforcement community, you actually could retire, same thing with air traffic controllers, at age 50 with 20 years of service or 25 years of service in any age. You, in order to be made whole, you're eligible for that annuity supplement right away. The other thing about the annuity supplement that the general population faces immediately is an earnings test, much like early Social Security. The annuity supplement is reduced if you go back to work once you go beyond a certain threshold of work income. This earnings test for these mandatory retirement categories that we're talking about now doesn't kick in until these folks reach what would otherwise be the minimum retirement age for the general formula. So if I'm a Leo or an air traffic controller retiring at age 50, I would get my annuity supplement and it would happen immediately, and I would not be earnings tested on that supplement until, you know, I reached maybe 57, if that were my minimum retirement age.
So if you work 20 years, you get 1.7% for the 20 years, and that would earn you
34%. Right, 34%.
Right. And then on top of that, you would get this supplement that's very closely to parallel to Social Security dollars, but it's not Social Security. It's paid by OPM. A number of people think it's Social Security.
It's right. It's a supplement to the annuity. That's correct.
Right. And then if they went to a second career, which I think if I had to profile it from my experience initially, they don't want to because of the stress. And after a couple of years, they go, I think I need to go to work. All right. So if they go to work, what I'm hearing, they could have the supplement, if you will, reduced.
Right. They could, but not if they go back to work. Let's just say they're retired 50, 51, 52, and go back to work within 2 years. They still have 3, possibly 4 years of annuity supplement without an earnings test. And again, this all goes back to the fact that they're leaving early because their job allows them to. They're paying more for their retirement benefits, but, you know, it's still vital. And they may not be able to do the rigors of the employment they used to have, but they can go out and get work. And to get a leg up and to get a jump on things, they're made whole by getting some of these other benefits earlier and not being subject to the same income testing that somebody who works a full career and gets a bigger retirement benefit at the end of the road.
Okay.
At a later time, of course.
All righty. So they get, if you will, this special treatment because of the special provision. Now, I'm just going to take a quick tangent off with taxes. Because they're, quote, PSOs, public safety officers, end of quote. That's a tax term. They're entitled to an additional subtraction from their retirement income as far as taxes go. So if their annuity was, say, I'm just going to pick 10,000. You can multiply it by whatever you want, whoever's listening. All righty. And you would get a tax deduction anyway of, say, 1,000. Again, I'm just, so you'd pay tax on 9,000. If you're a public safety officer, you'd get up to an additional $3,000 subtraction based on how much of your annuity was withheld for health insurance. So if your annuity had $1,900 withheld for health insurance, that would be your additional subtraction. If it was $3,900, it would max out at three. And it's kind of screwy how you do it on the form. It's on line 16, first page of the 1040, and you just write in PSO to the left of line 16B, and then you subtract, of course, what you're entitled to.
Yeah, it's interesting because federal employees actually get premium conversion, which is what you're talking about in retirement for PSOs. They're able to pretty much take off their taxes whatever money gets committed for their health insurance. The only folks who are actually able to do this in retirement, which of course they have to do on their 1040, is the public safety officer community, up to $3,000. So it's a nice benefit. It was a result of, to correct me if I'm wrong, there was a Pension Reform Act of a number of years ago.
2006,
right.
And then there was a Pension Reform Act after that, and most feds think, remember I said think, they qualify for this. And this reform said public safety employees. Notice how slick they are here. They just changed the last letter. It's not O, it's E. They could get to their 401ks, their thrift savings. Don't mishear that. I didn't say that they could get to their thrift savings, but they think they can because they're public safety employees. They're not. The definition of a public safety employee is anything but a Fed. Mm-hmm. It's basically anybody but a Fed. Don't ask me where it came from, but I've had some unfortunate heated discussions. Not me, of course, but I think people were frustrated. Why can't I be a member of that club? Well,
so you officer can't. Versus employee. That's kind of hair splitting a little bit.
Isn't it's it? Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All righty. So, air traffic controllers. How about a firefighter?
Same. You know, you're looking at a group that has exceptionally rigorous physical requirements. I mean, firefighters, I can't imagine a group that's got more. I mean, law enforcement, they're in the same category. These are folks that are out there putting out those fires, and they have mandatory retirement at age 57. So much the same way, they're contributing slightly more to the retirement fund, but they're getting a bigger benefit for those first 20 years. And the interesting thing about the law enforcement and we're talking firefighters now, is that they work, you know, they're kind of 24/7. They're working, I guess what you'd call administratively uncontrollable overtime hours. So as a result, their base pay factors in an additional amount per year to account for this AUO. The law enforcement community calls it LEAP, Law Enforcement Availability Pay. And they get upwards of an additional 25% added onto their base pay, and that's included in their high three calculation. Firefighters, slightly different formula, but still, it's additional money that's part of their annual base pay for the high three calculation. So they're getting an added benefit because this usually premium pay of any kind is not part of the high three calculation for the general formula folks. You could be working scheduled overtime, have Sunday premium pay, night differential, which is that 10% that you get between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. working the graveyard shift. If you're not a wage grade employee, that doesn't count in high three either. So these folks, actually, because of this overtime, which cannot be administratively controlled, wind up getting a larger base pay amount per year, and that's factored into their high three calculation.
Okay. Now, when one of these individuals has to retire, is it 56 or is it 57?
57, I know for a fact, for firefighters and for law enforcement folks, with some exceptions that can be made by agency heads to extend them to 60 or 61. And I believe the air traffic controllers might be 56. That could have been changed to 57, okay, too. I haven't looked at the latest legislation.
I'm going to get in the weeds here, and I apologize for doing this. But let's say my start date is after the date that I have to retire.
Right.
And my start date, if I had worked through that date, I would earn another 1.7%. But I can't because I have this brick wall that faces me at a certain time. And so I just don't get it that year. Is that the case?
Well, let's back up a little bit. I mean, typically, and I know this from my experience with ATF, if you are being hired at a point where it's actually over the age of 37, you couldn't do your 20, it's going to be really tough to get hired unless there's some special consideration given to you. They're going to say, sorry, you're too old, you can't make it the full 20 years. In some instances, they'll allow you to do it, but they're special cases, and then they're able to work their 20, and they retire even if they're beyond age 57. But that agreement needs to be reached at the point of hire, and it's not something that's done easily. Much the same way as it's not done easily to extend one from, say, the age 57 mandatory retirement date to age 60. It requires the approval of the agency head. So what you're talking about doesn't really happen that often. Well, that wouldn't really happen in these communities. It could happen with some kind of overseas service situations, but not in these.
It reminds me of my days in basic training at Fort Bragg. And when I went in and I looked around at everybody, I felt like I was the elders. I won't say state to me. And I was 21.
Wow.
And I asked somebody, I said, what's the deal? How come they can't draft somebody older? And they go, because you're in the infantry. They don't want you thinking twice about doing things. Now, that was not a negative comment. I understood it. If you're potentially married or you're set in your ways and you have kids, you're going to think twice probably about doing something that you might otherwise not. I guess that was the theory, but I looked everywhere I could to find somebody older than 21.
It's true.
They weren't there. Although there were a couple, then one of the I'm geezing here. Forget it. Anyway, so let's get back to. I hope this makes sense to the folks that are listening, especially the person that suggested we do this. And now, why don't we do this? Let's open up the phones because I think we've got not all certainly of the basics down, but we've got the basics down and we twisted it a little bit for good reason. We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. And Andrew is waiting for your call. And Andrew smiles and says, yes, bring it on. All righty. So let's come back. We did air traffic controllers, firefighters. Who else might be under this?
Well, air traffic controllers, firefighters, law enforcement officers. You also have... And these folks are not subject to mandatory retirement. You've got a number of intelligence agencies in the Defense Department, other parts of the government, that require employees to be overseas for periods of time. And for the overseas service, and again, you got to be careful, not all of it. You got to double check with the human resources activity of the agency. The overseas service brings with it an enhanced formula, much the same as the earlier years under LEOs, air traffic controllers, firefighters. Essentially, every year overseas in these covered jobs is 1.7% under FERS. And by the way, for those in the CSRS categories, we're looking at 2.5% for each of the first 20 years under the mandatory retirement occupations we were just talking about. And it's the same thing for overseas service. It's not required that you serve 5 years overseas. If you're on the Hill in the legislative branch, you get an enhanced formula because your job is not perhaps as secure as someone who is not dependent upon their congressperson or senator getting reelected. You know, you could be out of a job if they aren't. So once they have 5 years on the job, they get an enhanced formula of 1.7% for each of those years on the Hill, or 2.5% if they're CSRS. The overseas service is similar to that. I mean, down to the month, if the service is what the agency allows... for this extra overseas credit, it's 1.7% per year, and it's down to the month. And when you leave your organization, even if you go to a non-covered agency, because you've been paying, again, more into the retirement fund for this work that you're doing overseas, it's not like you're getting it for nothing. When you leave, the Office of Personnel Management is going to have a record of the fact that you paid more for that service, and when your service is certified, they do the summary when you leave your agency. You'll get an enhanced formula for all of the time that you've been overseas. Even if you might have worked at NSA and now you're working for agriculture. They don't have any overseas service, but you had 2 years of it while you were with NSA. You still get credit for that, even though you left the organization that sponsored that kind of work.
Hmm. And back to the tax, not that this is a tax show because it's not, but there are special provisions in the law, like we talk for the health insurance as an additional tax deduction for the folks that they could be stationed inside the U.S. They could be military. They could be law enforcement. They could be intelligence officers. They could be PHS has officers. They're quasi-military. They just don't have weapons. Same with NOAA. And if they are outside of their tax home and they can't sell their home within the five-year kind of positive experience, they can extend it up to 10 years if they were outside up to 10 years.
So wow, I didn't even know that.
There's a tax law that says if you live in your home for any two-year period out of the preceding five, I'm forgetting a lot of the weeds here. I don't forget them. I'm not bringing them up. Then you can make up to $250,000 profit on the sale of your home. There's some twist to that, too. Or up to $500,000 if somebody's married. And so initially the military folks said, well, what about us when this was passed? We can't come home. We're on active duty. And they say, okay, for as long as you're on active duty, but no more than 10 years, it could be up to 2 out of 15 years. And then the NOAA officers and the public health officers came in and said, what about us? And then the Foreign Service officer says, well, what about us? And Congress says, come on in. And then the intelligence community, not wanting to raise their hand and say, I are one, said, what about us? We can't even tell you where we are. So they were granted the same thing.
Let me ask you a question from a tax perspective. Now, say I am overseas, you know, I got to rent my house out. So I've got a management firm dealing with a rent and, you know, some carrying fees in order to do this. I think you guys call those passive losses.
Yes.
Do people who are overseas, as a result of the job requiring them to be there for the government, do they get any relief from that? Can they write that off during the year?
Well, remember, they could get the two out of up to 15.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but when it was rented, it's really not the residence. And worse, but good, they are required to claim something called depreciation. And a number of folks says, I just won't claim it because I have to pay it back when I sell it. Unfortunately, depreciation, you pay it whether you claimed it or not.
Mm.
So that kind of skews the calculation. They would still, again, qualify for the 2 out of 15, but they have this awful thing called depreciation recapture. But like you say, the losses that you couldn't claim are then all deductible in the year of sale.
Right, right.
And
that's a good deal.
I know I'm skipping over some points, so the real tax types listening to this, this was a general comment.
Yes.
And there's, I have to say this, I just got NARF's magazine. NARF is National Association of Active and Retired Federal Employees, and they've really revamped the magazine in the last few months. Not that it wasn't readable before, but it's very easy to read now. And there's a gentleman, fortunately, that I've been able to know, David, and I know I'm going to mess up because I'm not so good with pronouncing it, Tobeacon. And he really writes and researches an article, and he wrote this article on retiring abroad. And I get this question an awful lot in class because I deal with people that move from wherever they are. And invariably, somebody says, what if I move overseas? And I can do certain things. Now I'm going to refer him to this. And this was not necessarily what state you move from, but here's the pluses, here's the minuses, here's what's to watch out for. It's not all-encompassing, but it's probably the best article I've ever seen of its type. And I would urge people, it is the August NARF magazine. You're not going to get it on their website because, of course, before the show, I tried to get it on the website. You can only get it through the magazine, and it's NARF, N-A-R-F-E, and I believe their email address is, that's what I thought it was, narfe.org. All righty?
Perfect.
And David writes other articles, too, and we have a phone call. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Well, better now. Thanks for calling.
Listen, I just want to make sure that I was awake. Did you just say that you have to be in the house for 3 years out of five? I thought it was 2 out of 5.
No, you have to live in the home two
yeah.
out of 5 years. But we were talking
yeah.
about people that couldn't meet the five-year test because
okay.
they've been stationed overseas or they're,
okay, well.
It's even can be continental United States.
Okay.
And so, it's unfair that they can't be because they've been duty assigned.
Yes.
And
I
so
understand.
Congress said, you know, I think you've got a point. So they allow 2 out of 15. But unfortunately, during the period of time that it's rented, you got to claim depreciation, so you can get wrapped around the axle with this. And what people make on a house and think is a gain isn't not necessarily the gain, because there may have been homes in the past that were not taxed that then become taxable later on in life.
So there is a limit. You cannot just keep doing it every 10 years.
No, you can do it every 2 years.
Every 2 years.
Yeah, remember it's 2 out of 5. So unless you're younger than 2, you can do it.
I would
yeah.
be talking to you.
Okay, so we can become very nomadic in retirement. We can go buy and flip homes and supplement our annuity income.
Yeah, why not?
All right.
Thanks a lot.
All righty. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All righty. Where are we, Bob?
Well, let's pin down, since we're talking about these special categories, let's once again review
why these, when these folks can go and what the criteria are to be able to retire. I mean, essentially in the FERS community, law enforcement, firefighters, air traffic controllers can retire once they have 25 years. There's no requirement that you also be age 50. Under CSRS rules, the law enforcement community at least had to be 50 with at least 20 years. And even if they had 25, they still had to reach that 50-year threshold. Under FERS, they don't. 25 years, any age, you can go. That's the earliest. And, of course, they have the mandatory criteria that we already talked about. And that means, okay, I can leave. I can get my annuity. And my annuity is going to have the enhanced formula for those first 20 years and the regular formula for the rest. I'll get my annuity supplement if I'm in FERS. I can leave so much earlier. So the question is, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? You know, and am I going to be made whole? One of the questions that I get frequently, and this is something that I wanted to toss back to you, is, all right, so if I wanted to use my TSP, let's say I'm really going to kick back and retire. I've had it. You know, I'm burned out for whatever reason, or I just simply want to retire. And I'm 48. I got my 25 years in. And, you know, maybe I don't want to do anything gainful. Maybe I just want to see the world. How can I draw my TSP? Am I able to, without penalty in particular, is there a way to do that?
Okay, this is going to be a two-step dance. Remember two steps. First step is you can take out payments at any age if you leave federal service. Okay? What Bob is getting at is, well, you need to add on to that, and he's talking to me now, Bob, mm-hmm. That's correct. Fact is it's going to be subject to income tax. There's no question. However, if the individual takes it out before the year in which they hit 55 and they just left the job, they're going to pay a penalty until they hit 59 and a half. Now, I'm not trying to drive it. What I'm trying to say here is this penalty doesn't last forever. But with regards to the profile of what the folks we've been talking about, they could leave federal service at 45. They can leave it at 47. Correct. Remember the first Secret Service retirement seminar that I did, which was a while ago, I walked in and I said to the training officer, where is the group of retirees? And they go, in here. And I didn't know about all this. This was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is pre-you and pre-Tammy. And then I got straightened out. But anyway, so somebody say 47, 48, you're right. I don't want to do this anymore. And I've put this money aside and I put it aside for retirement. Are you telling me that I'm going to be penalized until I hit 59 and a half? And the answer is, yeah, we're talking about the thrift now. The traditional IRA, there's no question. Roth IRA, there's issues as well. So I'm going to pay a penalty of 10% on top of. So if I'm in a federal and state tax bracket of 25%, I'm going to get hit with a 35%. And that's steep. And so Congress came back and said, you're right. And they have a rule, and affectionately they're called the 72T rules. Now, why 72? If you ever see a number in front of any explanation, that's the IRS code. So IRS code section 72 says, gee, you know, we feel for you. Here's the deal. If you base your payments out over what they figure your life expectancy is, not you, you might have a malady, you might have an ailment, they don't care, unless it's really severe, then if you base it out over your lifetime, then we won't penalize you. You will pay income taxes on it. And somebody's going to say, yeah, but I'm 48. My life expectancy could be 35 years. This is not enough to make my ends meet. I mean, I put this in here for that reason, and now you're telling me I can't have it without paying this premium. So then they said, okay, let's add some more complexity to the law. And there's three different ways to make this calculation, but it's your choice, and one of them can be a lot more than the simple dividing life expectancy into the value of your TSP, and they're called the 72T rules. I will not explain them because I will lose the audience. But the audience listening should be aware that it isn't necessarily just your life expectancy. And also, don't think you qualify as a public safety employee because you don't. You're a public safety officer. We talked about that at the beginning of the show. This is where I usually get in some hate mail. You forgot about public safety employees? And I said, yeah, I did, because it doesn't apply to the audience we talk to. And I do it very diplomatically, of course.
Sure. So right. I could sort of be whole then. I could get my annuity. I would get my annuity supplement. It wouldn't be tested for earnings until I reach what would normally be my full retirement age or my minimum retirement age under the general formula for us. And then based on these rules you're talking about, I could actually tap into TSP based on a life expectancy payment stream without having to pay the penalties. I'd be paying the taxes. Is there ever a point where I'd move off that life expectancy?
Anytime you want, after you hit 59 and a half. Remember, between whatever age we are, it could be, again, in our middle 40s, late 40s, early 50s, we're stuck with this for at least 5 years or until we hit 59 and a half, whichever is later.
And then you can actually go to that payment of choice, which can be changed once a year.
Right. So I call this option three. There are four options to taking money out of the thrift, and option three has two subsets. One is what we initially talked about. The spread is over a lifetime. The second option is at your direction, which you could get into the 72T business, but as you mentioned, once I hit this magic date, I'm no longer required. I could take a minimum distribution, and maybe by this time I do have a second career. And then my minimum distribution is $25 a month until I hit 70 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not going to mess up anybody's tax return. So I flip down to that. Now, if I need additional money, now I think some people miss this. This is, again, forget whether they're Leos or not Leos. Under the second option of monthly payments, you tell them what you want. And the first option, they're telling you what you're going to get, not the TSP, this IRS calculations. And you can change your mind once a year. So you could keep your payments very low, say take the minimum $25 a month. And then if you foresaw a need of, say, $10,000, I'm ignoring tax here for a second, then I could jump up my monthly payment for $800 to $800 for the next 12 months. I get my $10,000. I bring it back down to $25.
Sure.
I leave it low. I need a car. I bring it up to $200, $300 a month. I pay the car off, bring it back down. And this is really showing you that you can get to the thrift more than once. In other words, it's not locked and loaded. Now, fortunately, we have the director of the thrift on, and every time he comes on, by the way, he's coming October 4th, 5th this year, 5th, I think. Greg, is that still in the law? And he goes, yes. And the tax counsel there smiles and goes, yes. Anyway.
So if I have a kid out there who's got these horrible college loans that they're never going to be able to pay off, I can sort of manage the yield on how well my TSP is doing, change my payment once a year, maybe just live on the yield if I'm having good years, and leave the nest egg alone or try to keep as much principal in there as I want since I'm managing the money. And then, you know, when I expire, my TSP3 would essentially give that money to my kid. Let's not even get into the tax ramifications of it, but hopefully it'd be enough to pay off those hundreds of thousands of vet school loans.
No.
That would work out. I've told her she has it coming, but not to rush me.
You must have a daughter that's in a vet school.
Yes, I do. One thing we haven't really talked about, and I don't have a huge amount of information, but I at least felt it was notable, has to do with disability retirement, which is kind of unique anyway, particularly under FERS. There's a special formula for it, et cetera. And it's a rather generous one, with 18 months on the job if you are disabled. And let me define disability for this benefit. Disability retirement means that a medically disabling condition renders you incapable of continuing in your current position at your current grade and pay, or any other position at that same level, grade and pay, say within your commuting area. And this medical condition is documented by medical evidence, your physician, information from your supervisor about how you're not able to perform, sick leave is being used, et cetera. And it's all documented, and OPM basically grants the approval for you to go and then gives a rather enriched formula, 60% times the high three for the first year, 40% years thereafter, and then another calculation at age 62. As generous as that sounds, sometimes it's possible to do better if you got this enhanced formula by being a Leo or a firefighter. And there have been a series of court cases that sort of change the way the Office of Personnel Management calculates annuities and survivor annuities for folks in these categories. In some cases, it's just to cut to the chase. It's all right if your enhanced formula for the years that you were in this occupation, if we gave you that and figured your retirement using it that way, as opposed to this special disability formula. If you wind up better in that situation, then you'll get the better of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And so the folks who are concerned that they're losing that credit or not doing as well under the disability formula can feel comfortable that there is now a rule out there that says if you wind up being better off with the enhanced formula for the number of years that you've worked, then that's the way it's going to be figured. Without really getting into the weeds about the way they calculate it.
And, you know, bring up the tax again. Congress is not all heartless with taxes. And with regards to the penalty, if somebody followed the profile of the individual that unfortunately had this medical issue, they most likely are going to be exempted from penalties, both from their traditional IRA as well as their TSP.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All righty. Now, the reason we're doing this show, again, is one for information, but first of all, we were requested by somebody, said, why don't you do this? So that's what we're doing. One of the person's requests was to talk about people that are transferred overseas, not necessarily military, not necessarily law enforcement and whatnot. What are they looking at? Now, they most likely are going to get a locality pay increase. Am I right with that, Bob?
It really depends. I mean, a lot of federal – I know that the State Department actually has, I think, locality pay pegged to the Washington, D.C. rate.
Mm-hmm.
Some agencies do that. Some do not. They get if you're overseas, you get – I guess what you categorize as a COLA because the cost of living is higher to live over there, but that's not really part of your base pay. And there are allowances that are paid overseas, might be hazardous duty allowances and so on, and those usually aren't part of the base pay calculation when you retire either. Some organizations will give what they call virtual locality pay when you're overseas, and I believe State is one of them, and there are a few other the intelligence agencies that also pay rates that are pegged to Washington.
And on top of that, the locality pay is going to be subject to income tax because I deal with one organization, let's call it government. And in the continental United States, somebody might be transferred to this particular location, and what appears to be a really nice pop in income won't even cover the rent because, remember, they're going to have to pay tax on the increase in the income.
Right.
But the rent is going to be more, and rent, of course, is non-deductible. And I'll stay out of the tax weeds with that, but that's a comment because the person did ask about being overseas, what special issues are there. I don't know that being overseas as a civilian employee shortens one's time that they have to work before they meet their minimum retirement age.
No, it doesn't. It's extra, unless they're in a special type of retirement system, and there's some that are out there, but by and large, you're looking at enhanced formula for the years that you're there, but you're basically still having to meet the same general formula requirements as far as age and service, which under FERS is 30 years of service at minimum retirement age or 60 and 20, 62 and 5. Of course, it's not going to give you a huge annuity, but a lot of people take health insurance that way.
Yeah, just maybe. Okay, we're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. It's about 10:44. We're on for another, 14 minutes, Andrew? Andrew says yes. And it's Monday, what is today, July 22nd?
According to my watch,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and we're in the AM. In another 14 minutes, we're going to be off, so don't call us there, but you can email us at For Your Benefit, F-O-R, Your, Y-O-U-R, Benefit, at NITPINC.com. For Your Benefit, at NITP, name of the company, INC, Incorporated.com. All righty, and we will answer your questions, and they might be benefit, they might be finance, they might be legal. Now, we've got to watch out with the legal. We can do general advice there, and it could be health, it could be psychology. We got all the bases covered. All righty, so I think we've touched on the folks overseas and potentially the hazardous duty or just locality pay and the pluses and minuses of it, and I think some of the people that I won't say unfortunately, but go to places you wouldn't want to go to, but you're assigned, and you get this pop in income, you don't have to worry about paying a lot for rent because True. You're inside of a compound.
And you get to use all of the amenities that the government provides. And if you stay within that as opposed to going out in the economy, you can actually bank that money. And given the fact that it is, quote, a COLA per se, it's not locality pay, it won't be figured in your retirement benefit, maybe that's a good thing to do, and you can build your own retirement nest egg with the extra money.
All right, let's build on that. Some people like it so much overseas that they decide, I think I'm going to live here in my retirement years. And, you know, my annuity is going to come to me, my Social Security is going to come to me if I'm eligible for that. But choosing a country to live in might be another story. They may have really been taken by the country that they live in from an emotional standpoint. And go, well, what about taxes? Now, here you got to be careful. You might wind up paying taxes both to the foreign government and to the U.S. Most of the time, that's not the case because they have what's called tax treaties between the countries and say, we promise we won't beat up your people if you don't beat up our people tax-wise. That's a real technical term. All right. So the other issue is sometimes people leave the federal government and then they go back and they work as an independent contractor for the federal government, or they work for a contractor to the federal government. They might be eligible for what's called a foreign income exclusion if they have earned income and they are not a Fed. They can exclude a lot from income taxes, generally at the federal level, and maybe not at the state. I would say more often than not at the state level if they have a state income tax return. Mm-hmm. And again, this NARF article scratches all the surface with this. It's the most comprehensive article and I'm not just trying to stroke David and NARF. It's really good. And I'm going to use it in class now. Somebody asked me a question, I'm going to say, here's the article, there's the answer.
Well, you know, you're talking about living overseas. I mean, that brings with it a whole variety of things to think about. It even goes beyond the communities of folks we're talking about now. If you're living overseas, one of the things you'll never be able to use is Medicare, because there is no Medicare overseas. So, you know, instead of buying Medicare B, when that becomes the primary payer, and then reducing your health insurance, I mean, when you're over there, you need a pretty high-powered health insurance. And because there are no preferred provider organizations, there are no Medicare-approved networks, you can keep the highest option plan you need. As a matter of fact, it's recommended you do that. Now, all well and good. Here's the rub. You decide to come back to the U.S., and let's say when you're coming back, you're 70, 71, 72, there are penalties associated with not getting into Medicare.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah. And the problem is you can't avoid those penalties. If you come back and decide that, okay, now I want to get into Medicare because it pays first and I no longer have any cost sharing with my health plan, then you have penalties to pay. 10% for every year that you have not been enrolled, assessed on whatever the lowest Medicare B premium happens to be for that given year. But generally speaking, if you're going to stay overseas, or if you're in an area without Medicare, you know, buying it because someday you may come back really doesn't make any sense. You know, if you're in relatively good health, sometimes it doesn't make sense. The nice thing about the federal employees' health benefit system is that they don't compel you to buy Medicare. When you're overseas, I mean, it's a lot of people make the decision that it just simply doesn't make any sense at all. I'm not going to fly myself back to the U.S. for medical care. So I'm going to stay here. I'm going to have the high option Blue Cross Blue Shield or some other fee-for-service plan, and that's going to take care of all of my needs.
Good point. And actually, in this article, I hate to keep pounding this article. I don't hate. It's just I'm going to sound like I'm a PR person for this article, but they have that exact thing in here. Remember, I said this scratches all the surfaces. Somebody moved outside the U.S. We'll just forget the country. The dollar tanked. They had to move back to the U.S.
Wow.
So, like you say, you know, Medicare B, then if they had not done it, then they're going to have to get
sure.
on it, but the penalties will cause it to be very expensive.
It can. Again, the penalty is typically assessed on whatever the lowest premium for Medicare B is. This year it's $104. So if you'd been out for 5 or 6 years If you had delayed your enrollment beyond your initial enrollment period for, say, 5 years, you'd be paying an additional $50, $51 a month for that monthly premium.
Okay. Now, you in your life, you spent a fair number of years overseas, correct?
Yeah, as an Army brat.
Yeah, as an Army brat. Uh-huh. But I don't know that you were probably not talking to people about what their life plans were, and not then.
No, not till I was 22 and I started my first federal job. Then I was actually doing retirement. No. That's
but
true.
Did you see many people stay behind? But you were in the military side of life.
You know, it's interesting that there were quite a few folks who were working for the U.S. government as civilians who were actually actually German, but their kids were fully Americanized. They're working for the U.S. government, and their kids were coming to American schools. And interestingly enough, I had a few of my friends who wound up staying in Germany because they knew the language, they were raised that way, and they were, you know, you go to school with them, you'd never believe they were anything other than full-blooded Americans, but they wound up staying. And, you know, are part of the economic environment. You know, a very good friend of mine just recently passed, had been there since the beginning. As a matter of fact, he was so scared after 9/11, he wouldn't even fly back for our triennial reunions because the school gets together every now and then. But they just live on the economy. He was used to paying all that money for gas. He had a BMW. He would, back in those days, you know, fill it up. It was like $50 to fill it up. And this was back in the 90s. Ooh. And he would cruise down the Autobahn at 115 miles an hour. But, you know, it's not too many, but a number of people stay.
Okay. Let me just, we're trying to get it real life experiences and cover everything that we were asked to cover.
Sure.
And I think we're about there. Are there any other special categories? You talked about law enforcement officers, air traffic controller, firefighters. Is there anybody else in that class that can be known? I'm sure there are, but that would cover the waterfront.
Pretty much. Now, again, public safety officers, those, I think I even mentioned this or asked you the last time. That could actually include chaplains, is my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a rather broad spectrum of folks. Before we leave, what I wanted to do, which we touched on, that high three calculation, I wanted to make mention of the fact that the law enforcement availability pay has a cap on it. It's up to 25% of the rate of basic pay that's payable to somebody at the GS 15 Step 10 level or Executive Level 5, whichever is more. And if pay during any pay period exceeds that, that's the cap. So it can't be any higher than that. And that sort of like says, all right, so your total compensation can't exceed 15 Step 10, you know, even if you're getting law enforcement availability pay, which is critical, too, because you have a lot of senior executive service folks who maintain their coverage in law enforcement, but they're making too much money to get LEAP because they're, in essence, above that level.
So in theory, could they be making, they're going to get hurt when they retire?
No. I mean, they will, whatever you're paid for is figured into your pay. But if, you know, you wind up making more money than that cap allows, then technically you don't get paid for it, nor is it a factor of what you get in retirement. The firefighter formula is a little bit different. It's a maximum of 25% of the minimum rate of pay for for GS-10. So that's a slightly different scenario. It doesn't have a cap. But the law enforcement folks can actually cap out on LEAP. Some are getting partial LEAP because their pay is so high. And others can get the full amount until they once again reach the aggregate rate payable to 15 Step 10 or Executive Level 5, whichever is higher. Yeah, right.
Do we ever get any crossover with the law enforcement community with the intelligence community? Because they're quasi extreme stress.
Yeah, it could, you know, that could happen. The other thing we didn't mention, too, is that it's possible to do your 20 in law enforcement and gain that benefit and then move into a field that doesn't have mandatory retirement. Maybe you become a management analyst, or maybe you become some kind of a consultant or someone who's involved in the field but not actually doing the field work. The good news is that you could stick around longer and you still get the enhanced benefit for the years of service that you did. As law enforcement. So you don't have to retire from a firefighter position or a law enforcement position. You basically can get the benefit as long as you have the minimum 20 years.
Great. Okay, we got about 3 minutes left. 202-465-3080. It's going to be a quick call, but give us a holler. All right, Bob, we got to bring the plane down for a landing. So we started with the basics, I think the real basics, right? Who's covered? And then you mentioned the formula. What's the formula again?
It's for FERS, 1.7% times each of the first 20 years. For CSRS, it's 2.5%. The CSRS contribution to retirement is generally 7.5% per year for FERS, where it's normally 0.8 of 1% for the older FERS employees. It's more for the newer. It's 1.3%. And, of course, the people who came on board this year are paying 3.2%, even if they're not in law enforcement. They're what we call FERS RAE employees, revised annuity employees.
Okay. And then we talked about if somebody does leave, how they could access their thrift and or IRAs, penalty-free. And they called it the 72T rules.
And the annuity supplement, which is not income tested until minimum retirement age under the general formula.
And it's not also like Social Security where you don't pay tax on 15% of it generally. That's not an overall comment.
Right.
And we talked about, we have two more minutes. Andrew just gave us the high sign. And then we talked about some housing issues, and we talked about living abroad and tax treaties, and if you are going to move from the states, and there is many states follow you, not all, follow you overseas, so be aware of what state you disembark from. Interesting. Maryland will follow you. Maryland follows the federal tax return. Okay. You live in Georgia. Georgia follows the federal tax return. They're very closely parallel in their concept. In Georgia, though, if you never anticipate coming back to the states and say, I'm not coming back, Georgia does not follow you. If you live next door to a Marylander, they're paying taxes to Maryland, even though they're never going back. I'm not saying you should move from Maryland.
That's why I moved to Florida. They don't tax you even when you're there.
All righty. Andrew says we have one more minute. I don't know if we have one more minute. Andrew, I hope you got some fillers. All righty. So thanks for listening. We'll be on next week with another great show. Check our website, nitpinc.com, and you can see who the guests will be for the next 6 weeks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.